Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The job of a school board member used to be or revolve around budget and personnel decisions, setting the calendar and voting on the next round of textbooks. Then COVID hit, thrusting public education into the maelstrom of a public health crisis with debates over everything from distance learning to mask mandates to vaccines. All that and the growing conflict over how the history of racism in the U.S. is taught have made once sleepy campaigns for the local school board anything but. Anna Staver covers politics for Gannett, Ohio. She's been following local school board races as well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about this a lot on our weekly reporter roundtable, which is sort of weird. We usually don't talk about school board races.
Yeah,
unless they're state school board, and even then, we don't really usually care that much.
Yeah, I usually don't talk about school board races either, but it seems that national politics has really filtered into these races because they became sort of the battleground for a lot of these issues. You know, Governor Mike DeWine at the start of this year said he's not issuing a statewide mandate on masks in schools like he did in the previous year. So these school boards are really the place where this decision is being made.
There are two important metrics here: how many people are running, how many candidates are on the ballot, and how much they're spending, right?
Yeah. And so I talked with the Ohio School Boards Association for an article I did a few weeks ago, and the number of candidates for board seats has doubled since 2017. And, you know, most of the folks on the ballot this year are first-time candidates, so about 1,300 are newcomers to, like, 1,277 incumbents. So not only are more people running, but a lot of that is driven by first-time candidates.
Right, first-time candidates. And I thought Joe Ingles did a really great job, and we'll put a link on our website today to her story today on how hard it is to track. So there's more money being spent, by the way, and it's hard to track that at the local level. We're sort of spoiled at the state and federal level, but at the local level, not so easy.
Yeah, there's actually a group called Save Worthington Schools, which incorporated it in August of 2021, and it's been real hard to figure out how much they're raising, where the money's coming from. The woman who's having the money spent against her kind of described it as dark money. It's hard to trace. And it's, you know, it's strange that you would think of dark money in a school board race.
Yeah, all of these kind of, you know, pejoratives coming out in this conversation. Yeah, that's Nikki Hudson that you were talking about. She's going to be on the program later on, and we'll get her firsthand account because it's become very personal. It's not her first rodeo. It's her second time running for a Board of Education in Worthington Schools. First time, obviously, she made it on the board. This time, you know, time will tell. We'll see. When you ask first-time candidates why they're running, what do they say, Anna?
It depends. There's a large swath for whom COVID is the reason, or the history teaching, what we would call the critical race theory debate. And so a lot of candidates are saying that, and they're also running as a group. So in Hilliard, there are three candidates who are running together. And what people should keep in mind is a lot of these boards are five-member boards. So three candidates is the majority. And so you're seeing these candidates run as a group and sort of saying, we will, you know, give parental choice back on masking. We will give parental choice back on vaccination. We will do this for history. And so you see them sort of running as these blocks of first-time candidates that are running on these platforms. There is a pair of candidates up where I live in the Olentangy School District. They call themselves like the Vote for the Moms, and they're running on the same exact platform.
But not, you know, they're appearing as blocks in Worthington, for example, but they may not be. In Worthington, they show them on the campaign sign as three, but one of them is not interested at all in being on that sign.
Yeah, that's the weirdest one. So like in Hilliard and Olentangy, these candidates are intentionally grouping together to build majorities. But in Worthington, it seems like somebody grouped them together just to push Nikki out. It was really a strange twist.
And the other candidates say they're not involved in it. It's an independent organization, independent group.
Yeah, I found that to be really interesting because, like, I'm used to it in state politics to see, like, some group come in with, like, a nasty mailer and they're, like, citizens for a freer freedom. And you're like, who are these people? You know, but to see it in a, like, Save Worthington Schools, it's a really benign, right, like, group. But it's hard to know who runs it and who they are. And I know CNN did an article about them and had like a real hard time tracking down someone to speak on their behalf.
Exactly. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about, I guess one way to put it is the nationalization of issues at the local level, the meaning or taking national issues like the disagreement over masking and vaccines and how we teach about the impact of racism in the U.S. in our schools to the local level. We're going to be hearing from more today on this topic, a professor of political science and education at Columbia University Teachers College who's written about school board elections, and also a member of the Worthington Board of Education who's seeking re-election on November 2nd, and what she has come across and how the campaign this year has changed from what it was 4 years ago. If you have a question or comment about this, the manifestation of national issues at the local level, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what I kind of gave what I think a typical perception of a thumbnail of what a school board member does at the local level. But what have you learned about what they do?
I think you were pretty spot on. You know, they set the lunch menu and the budgets, and they help pick superintendents and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of times you used to look back on them and say maybe there was an open seat and nobody was running. Maybe somebody was running unopposed. These were very sleepy jobs, as you said. And now they're become much more controversial. And I think that's kind of what they do. A big part of it is setting the budget and the school calendar. But you're right. They also pick the school books. And with this debate over what is critical race theory, is it being taught in our schools? Is it not? I mean, then what history book you're teaching, what kind of books you're assigning in English class became a controversial topic. And, you know, when you get down to masks, I mean, that's obviously been a hugely controversial topic.
The whole critical race theory thing, I mean, I have yet to find anyone who's identified a public school district where such a thing, which is college level at least, if not post-grad level or legal law school level content being taught.
So this is the challenge with this debate. I think people are working with two different definitions of it. You have the more legal scholarly definition, and then you have this idea put forth by people that there's an ideology, and that gets much more expansive, and they say that it's anti-American, that it creates this narrative of oppressor and oppressed. And like, the funny thing is when you talk to people who oppose its teaching and people who, I don't say they like directly support its teaching, they sort of support a more inclusive, like, I think they're like 80% on the same page. When you're like, you know, people who oppose CRT are like, we should have more Black authors on the English reading list. And I'm like, well, where is like the divide? And I think it's one of those situations where they're mostly on the same page, and I can't quite figure out why they're yelling at each other.
Worthington curtailed a September school board meeting after a group of attendees refused to wear masks and two people gave a Nazi salute. Given that type of environment, I mean, it's kind of surprising. There's not only are there a lot of newcomers applying for the job, running for election, but there are also a lot of old timers saying thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. One of the school board members in Worthington, Rick Villardo, I hope I said his name correctly, he decided that he wasn't going to run for re-election because the atmosphere had become basically too poisonous for him. And then you look at, you know, down near Dayton, there's a candidate from the Centerville area. His name is David Rohr. He said somebody came to his house on a Saturday night after dark, banged on his door, rang his doorbell, and started screaming, like, you're what's making America bad. And he had to call the police. And, you know, school board members don't get paid a lot of money. They're very low reimbursement jobs. You make a couple $1,000s a year. And I think a lot of people are saying, like, you know, someone coming to my house and terrorizing my family after dark on a Saturday night is my limit.
This. Yeah. Yeah. And are you finding that across? I mean, is that there a pattern there as well?
Yeah. And it's not universal. Like in Hilliard, I talked to a guy who's like, I've been on the board for 12 years. I'm in my late 60s. Like I had decided to do this long before the COVID debate hit. So there are natural retirements. Yeah. I mean, 12 years is a long time to serve on a body. So it's not universal, but we definitely are hearing from people who said, like, I didn't sign up for this.
You reported that the Ohio School Boards Association is cutting ties with its parent organization, or the National, over a letter sent to President Biden. Tell us about what's going on there.
Yeah, so this is an interesting... So for those who don't know, back in September, the National School Board Association sent a letter to President Biden saying, hey, we need your help. You know, they documented a bunch of the violence and the heated debates that have happened across the country, you know, at these school board meetings. And they said, you know, maybe it's time for the DOJ, for the FBI to sort of look into these. And the really controversial part is they alluded that these may be acts of domestic terrorism. And then the Biden administration with the attorney general, Merrick Garland, said, yeah, we'll look into these things. We'll see what we can do to support local law enforcement. And this got a really big backlash. You know, conservatives like Attorney General David Yost.
Ohio Attorney General, yeah.
Yes, the Ohio Attorney General was like, you know, having the FBI come to a school board meeting is a great way to silence parents. And so there was a lot of conservative backlash to this. And the Ohio School Board Association was like, look, nobody asked us what we thought about this. The National Board just went off and wrote this letter. And yeah, there absolutely shouldn't be violence or intimidation or threats made against school board members, but they believe that should be handled at the local level. And they felt that the national group didn't handle themselves correctly, so they voted to break with them.
What are the consequences of that?
Practically speaking, I'm not 100% sure what the consequences are, but I think it's about the optics, right? Like, to navigate in a state like Ohio to lobby effectively at the state legislature, I think not having that affiliation would be helpful because it is a Republican-controlled legislature.
Okay, I see. All right, let's take a quick call from Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie in Columbus. You're on the air.
Hi. My question, and I guess last comment, is this. I don't understand why teaching about racism, teaching about differences is an issue in overwhelmingly white, almost all white school districts. That's number one. And to the extent...
Well, let me pose that just a different way, Stephanie. You think it's an issue in more diverse school districts?
No, I don't think it's an issue at all.
At all. Okay.
I don't think it's an issue at all.
Gotcha.
So I guess it's sort of a combined thing. Why are you making an issue, overwhelmingly white, almost all white school districts, making an issue, creating an issue about something that is not taught until you get out of high school,
right?
And in an overwhelmingly white school district, I guess I just don't understand the purpose and point of that, because it just creates a lot of angst. But the other thing is, I also don't understand why overwhelmingly white school districts do not want to teach children about differences, particularly because we live in a global world and you cannot curate the narrative for your children to hear and to see and to learn about in school, and also prepare them to live in a society that is very different from the one that they grew up in and the one that they existed in.
Well, I guess what you're saying is you shouldn't expect them to be able to function in the larger society without having the knowledge.
Right.
They certainly can if they want to. you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
You get the distinction, Stephanie? Yeah.
And you can't. And the thing is that to the extent that you want to curate historical things that have happened, slavery, the Holocaust, except with a completely different narrative, then I guess the other thing is that, you know, you can't change history. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You won't heal what you refuse to acknowledge. And I guess the other concern is, again, it gets back to preparing children and to let children know that it's okay to talk about things that are different and things that they don't understand. So that's just my question.
And let me, all right. And then, Stephanie, how do you, and the point taken, this show isn't exactly about critical race theory and the debate over
that. No, I understand.
So how do you, or what do you think the role of a local school board should be in all of this? I mean, and how it plays a role in, in the local politics of the election.
Okay, so let me just in the interest of fair disclosure, I am the child of a person who served on the school board in the school district that I attended in Cincinnati.
Okay.
And my father also served on was a delegate and connected to the Ohio State School Boards Association.
Okay.
Now, that's been 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that the Board of Education serves the same role as a regular board of directors is. Their job is to be a steward over what happens within the district to ensure that everything functions the way that it is supposed to ensure that the district is not running afoul of different laws that have been passed,
okay.
to ensure that there's equity and order within the district. It is not to be used for people because they have some sort of agenda on something that simply does not exist.
Okay.
I just think that that's a tremendous waste of money. I think it's a tremendous waste of time. And most importantly, I think that it does nothing to benefit students who don't really interact with people of color on a regular basis.
Well, I mean,
I think it hurts them way more.
Well, Stephanie, I got to let you go, but I appreciate your call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
I am interested to see what happens next week, Anna Staver. I suppose you're going to be covering it, and we'll probably be giving you a call. Is that okay?
Yeah. Turnout is what I'm most going to be interested in, is these races are usually a couple thousand voters.
And I'm
real curious not only to see who wins, but to see how fired up people are for these races.
I am too, exactly. I'm wondering if it'll move the dial a little bit in terms of what typical turnout is. So I'm interested in that too. Anna Staver, State House reporter for the USA Today Network, Ohio Bureau. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
More coming up, so stay with us. If you have a question or comment about these local races being politicized with national issues, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how the divisive national political climate has gained a foothold in local politics and, in particular, campaigns for local boards of education. Jeffrey Hennig is a professor of political science and education at Columbia University Teachers College. He co-authored the 2019 book, Outside Money in School Board Elections, The Nationalization of Education Policy. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So is it all coming true what you predicted in your book?
Well, you know, it's important to keep in context the fact that there's, you know, roughly 13,500 school districts around the country. And most of them are still undergoing elections and school board meetings that are more typical of American history, which is very low key, low attendance, low turnout, and often very almost issueless discussions. But there is something happening right now, and it's important to pay attention to it.
You co-authored a book about the nationalization of education policy in 2019. So what was happening? What spurred the scholarship on that book?
Well, we were struck by, at that time, what we saw as increasing amount of donations going into school board elections from folks who didn't live in the districts and often didn't even live in the states. And that included donations from very wealthy individuals, some of whom were known in the school reform community and others who weren't. And it seemed like a puzzle to us because generally people had been thinking local school boards were not really where it's at anymore. The action had moved to the state and national level.
Yeah, I mean, CNN did a story on a local race here, could not find could not identify who was funding this outside campaign, and ended up finding a guy in, I think, in New York. Yeah, in Queens, New York, who launched a 1776 Project PAC, which he describes as the first national super PAC for school board elections. Was that on your radar at the time?
No, when we were looking at this a few years ago, the main kind of dynamics in terms of outside money was around specifically particular approaches to school reform and mostly issues like charter schools. So it was proponents of charter schools who were getting involved in local elections. What we're seeing in this last year is this similar in some ways, but different experience of the driving issue being issues around COVID preparedness and masking and things like that, or issues around teaching of race issues, critical race theory. And there's different organizations by and large, I think, that are behind the scenes in terms of the national actors on this.
We had a caller earlier who made the point, the salient point, I think, that critical race theory is really not being taught in most schools. No one's been able to identify a local school district where it's being taught at all. It's something at the college and post-grad level, really. Post-grad, more importantly, I don't remember and don't know anybody who learned it in college even recently undergrad. So what are your thoughts or what do you think about the appropriateness of debating that issue at the local level? Is it helpful?
Well, I mean, I'd say two things about this. One is when national issues tend to infiltrate local politics, people are usually responding not to what they see on the ground, what they see in the community, what they see in their schools. They're responding to their images that are often caricatured images of what's happening elsewhere in the country. So it's easy for people to get concerned about something that they really don't know a heck of a lot about. That said, I don't think it's enough to sort of say, oh, well, critical race theory isn't being taught, because the fear and anxiety we're seeing from some of the parents at the local level really isn't about critical race theory per se. Mm-hmm. It's about the perception that race is being discussed in ways that make them or their kids uncomfortable.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about how national political issues have broken through into local, hyper-local politics, including the local school board elections, especially this year. My guest is Jeffrey Hennig. He is a professor of political science and education at Columbia University Teachers College. He is the co-author of the 2019 book, Outside Money and School Board Elections, The Nationalization of Education Policy. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau had a good story today about the problem with the this outside money coming into local school board races, is that you can't track it as easily at the local level. It doesn't have the same rules and regulations as it does at the state and federal level. Right, Jeffrey Hennig?
Oh, that's definitely right. Of course, it's difficult. It's increasingly difficult to trace money in politics at the national and state level as well, since the Supreme Court ruled that this was essentially protected speech. In doing our book, we had to go to each individual district that we were looking at to get access to information on donations. And some of those were straightforward direct donations from individuals to candidates, but many times individuals give to organizations, the organizations give to candidates, and you can't track back to the origin of the money trail.
Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Hi, I just called because I listened to your earlier program about school board coaching voters on how to, I'm sorry, somebody's drilling outside my house, how to vote for candidates who are against masks or against vaccine mandates. And so I went and got the League of Women Voters guide. Those two questions are not addressed there. So how do you find out how your candidates, especially if they've been on the board before, or I guess I would have to call the new ones, how they stand on those issues? I come from a public health background, so I'm all for the greater good with the, you know, understandable medical exceptions or long-held religious beliefs. But otherwise, I think until COVID is way, way down, the kindest thing for people to do is get a vaccine, and that includes kids.
Okay, well, that's not exactly what the program's about is the issue, but it's about how, you know, what voters and what they're struggling with when it comes to voting for somebody. How do they get this kind of information? Whoever asked those questions before in, Meet the Candidate nights, Jeffrey Hennig?
So in the past, school board elections were often more about shaking hands and meeting the person. And people ran for school board quite often based on their personal history and their engagement with the school and the district. And people wanted to know who the candidates were and did they trust the candidates. And issues have often been on the back burner in terms of the public sessions with candidates. And when issues have been on, they've been around, you know, hyper-localized things like, you know, can we afford to have lights at the high school stadium and things like that? We're seeing now, and this is, you know, and we have to admit that this is new. We're not going to know exactly how much energy and sustainability there is to this current interest. But right now we have some school board elections happening in November at the same time as general elections. It's important to note that most school board elections around the country are held off cycle. They're held at a different time of year. When they're held at the same time as general elections, you get a wider range of people responding, you get more attention. So we're seeing, you know, these high visibility, high octane, polarized issues coming into school boards unusually.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what that does to turnout, don't you think?
Yes, it definitely will. Now, turnout, you know, in school board elections traditionally is low, especially when they're off cycle, because then you're really just getting the folks who are interested in school politics per se. You get parents and you get teachers who turn out. When it happens at general election time, a lot of people are going into the voting booth because there may be another election for a mayor or city council or governor on the ballot. And so people go in to vote, but often in the past, they've kind of slid right over the school board choices.
I'm wondering if what we know, maybe when the last time things became this polarized, and I'm thinking maybe it was during the desegregation movements of the 1960s and 70s.
Well, I think so. I think that's a good choice if we're talking about a polarization that shows up around the country. I mean, what's been fairly typical in school board elections is episodic attention at the local level. A particular community would have a particular issue, a scandal around this or that superintendent or a contract that the school boards had or something that a teacher said. So you'd get these hot bursts in one community or another community. What's different is when it seems to be happening over so many communities and issues around racial desegregation, first in the South and then as it moved north, were similar to that. Although, just to be clear, those played out over 10, 15 years. And this case, we've yet to see whether it's, you know, it's particular to the lead into the upcoming congressional elections, which I think is an important part of this story, or whether it's something we'll see around year after year.
Well, what do you think? Do you have a prediction? Have you prognosticated on this?
Well, I do think we're going to see it on the radar screen, certainly until the midterm elections, because a lot of the maneuvering around these education issues increasingly is tied not to education-specific issues, but to these broader battles for who's going to turn out voters for president, for governor, for Senate, for Congress. And right now, this is an issue that seems to get people riled up. Right now, it's mostly getting people riled up on the anti-mask, anti-critical race theory side. I think there'll be efforts to counter-mobilize that we'll see from other actors trying to convince people that traditional public education is under assault and they need to stand up for teachers, stand up for the rights to for teachers to teach about controversial issues. In both cases, getting voters excited so that they'll turn out to vote is a big part of what's motivating us.
Is there, I mean, people are, I'm wondering what the role of social media has been in all of this, and also technology, that a lot of people say, someone questioned about one school board candidate locally. Well, how many meetings have you even been to in the last, 4 years? And they're like, well, for the last 18 months, I've gone to every one of them virtually. What about all of that and how much more, the greater ability to know what's going on in a way?
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, social media is a big part of the story of politics in the U.S. today, and not just in the U.S., but and there's various dimensions to that, but one of those is that places that were off the radar screen entirely can be brought onto the radar screen very quickly. And national actors, if they are interested in making contact with locals and coaching them in terms of strategies for how to discuss issues or how to run for office, it's a lot easier today than it used to be. So people make connections. That can be connections for good or connections for ill.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get back to it. We'll take your questions and comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about school board elections and how these once quiet races now mirror the national political rancor. In Worthington, that has meant attack ads, dark money, and misinformation. Still with us is Jeffrey Hennig, professor of political science and education at Columbia University Teachers College. He co-authored the 2019 book, Outside Money in School Board Elections, The Nationalization of Education Policy. Nikki Hudson is a member of the Worthington Board of Education. She is seeking re-election in November, and her candidacy has been targeted by an outside group that favors another candidate, Brian Steele. Now, Brian Steele declined our invitation to join the program. He did leave us with a statement about the race, which I'll be reading parts of later. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Nikki Hudson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you give us a thumbnail about the differences between 4 years ago and this round? Because 4 years ago was your first race, right?
That's correct. Polar opposites. 4 years ago was a matter of getting my name out into the community for better or for worse. I have name recognition now. We were talking about things like building new buildings or aging facilities, standardized tests, challenges related to dyslexia. And now we're talking about mask mandates, the need for vaccines, some things that people believe are critical race theory, but even though that's not taught in K-12 education, diversity, equity, and inclusion, just very different landscape.
And it's not just what's being talked about, it's how it's being talked about?
That's accurate. So previously, you may have individuals who write emails to the board expressing their concerns or show up at board meetings expressing their concerns in a very civil, respectful manner. And we've had board meetings that definitely do not reflect that. We've had board meetings where people were screaming, were using the Nazi salute. I've been the subject of hate mail that was distributed not just to me, but to other districts still with my name on it. It's nothing like it was before.
In some places, people have gotten out of races because of this. You're sticking with it.
I am.
Why?
A few reasons. My husband and I are raising two girls in our community. They go to the school. They're 12 and 14. And from the very beginning, when this one organization started attacking me, we said, you know, you don't back down to bullies. And candidly, if all white privileged people back down in the face of adversity, we'd never make progress. And so we have continued on. I will admit, it's been very hard recently.
You know, Jeffrey Hennig, I'm wondering what your sense is about, even though, well, we're waiting to see what kind of impact this may or may not have in 2022 in the midterms, but long term, any thoughts about how this kind of discord at this level affects politics in general?
Well, the discord, I think, is destructive. The level of interest may not be. So, you know, it's not an altogether bad thing that school board elections that have been so quiet, often uncontested, would actually be animated by discussions about big policy issues. That's not a bad thing, and it might lead to greater interest and turnout down the line. What we're seeing right now is a particularly raucous version of that that seems to be animated more by emotion than sort of engaging with the issues. And that could scare off a lot of good candidates. You know, school board jobs are not highly desirable jobs. They're poorly paid. There's long nighttime meetings. It's often dealing with issues that are technical in terms of contracts and building contracts and things like that. So you add in an element of sense of putting yourself out on a limb and exposing yourself and your family. And I expect that there is, you know, that there's a genuine risk that we'll lose some good candidates, at least in the near term.
Why, you know, we invited Brian Steele on. It seems like he says he's not behind these attack ads on you, Nikki Hudson. He is associated with them. I mean, he seems to be favored by the group that is attacking you. He wrote to us, "The partisanship in this election has been very disappointing. I've sought to talk about important issues like transparency and putting kids first. Opponents have made this a race about politics." How do you respond to that?
I respond by saying I haven't made it about politics at all. I mean, what I have done is I have talked about what we have accomplished the past 4 years as a board and what my priorities are going forward. And that is ensuring that we have a school district that supports all students, not just the students of wealthy children. But we also ensure that we hear from and ensure are taking care of those students and families who have been historically marginalized. So, and the same thing with his claim about transparency. My question every time that's brought up is, what do you feel like hasn't been transparent? You know, you can say something is not transparent, but then show me what's behind that statement.
And I have not spoken to him. He declined our invitation to join us, to join the program today. He wasn't at the Meet the Candidate night from the Ohio the League of Women Voters Columbus that I moderated. So has he responded to that?
I haven't seen anything substantive.
And he said again in his statement that there's mail in this race paid for by the Ohio Democratic Party. Do you know about that?
I do know about that. So if you are a member or you are endorsed by the Franklin County Democratic Party and you want to send something out mass mail, you can do so utilizing the discounted mail rate that the ODP gets.
And in doing so, mail, yeah.
Exactly. And so in doing so, the ODP's name is what has to go on it. So they claim, there have been others on his side who have claimed that, well, that's dark money as well. Well, no, it's not. Because on my campaign finance report, it will show that I paid this amount of money and that I had to pay the Franklin County Democratic Party and that it was for mailers.
Yeah.
No dark money.
Okay. And Jeff Hennig, you agree that's not dark money.
No, from the characterization there, that's not an example of dark money. You know, the concern, of course, you know, in these hot races, everyone thinks politics is what's on the other side, you know, and analysis and reasoned assessment of values is what they do. There are important political issues that are involved in schools, and it's not untoward that political organizations would get involved. What is of concern is when that's hidden and when it's done in a way that sort of mischaracterizes the facts on the ground.
Brian Steele further went on to say there was an illegal mailer with a fact disclaimer sent by opponents trying to tie me to Donald Trump. You're familiar with that red postcard that went around the district. Do you have any connection to that mailer?
Absolutely none.
There's also the issue of grouping Brian Steele, Jennifer Best, and
Kelly Davis
in one sign. Jennifer Best, she has responded saying she didn't have anything to do with that, but she doesn't seem to care as much. Kelly does.
Yes.
What about that?
I mean, if you put yourself in the shoes of a first-time candidate, it's really hard to put yourself out there, right? And she's been working on this campaign for a year, over a year. And obviously, I can't speak for Kelly. I'm speaking of, you know, outside view of it. But it has to be incredibly frustrating to have people pull you in and promote you when you do not align with their values. So in other words, Kelly doesn't align with the fact that they're smearing me. And they will not stop pulling her into that slate.
You know, Jeff Hennig, this kind of thing of pulling somebody in without their regard, without their permission, is completely legal, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's legal, you know, and it can be effective. Again, a lot of these issues turn on sort of energizing people who haven't been paying a lot of attention over time. And simple stories about good guys versus bad guys is the kind of thing that can work, especially when we're in this rapid period of, you know, when the events that are concerning people are just unfolding at the same time an election is happening, then folks, again, sometimes on both sides, will look for simple narratives, simple stories to communicate to people what they're saying the issues are.
Well, you know, Kelly's a diverse candidate, too, a racially diverse candidate. Do you think that plays a role in any of this, Nikki Hudson?
I'm sure it does. I'm sure they feel like it looks good for them. Beyond that, I don't know. Honestly, beyond that, I think, and they just want anyone other than me.
What kind of feedback are you getting from the community about this? Those two billboards, you know, heading south on High Street into Worthington. What kind of feedback are you getting from people?
They're disgusted. Another direct mailer landed evidently yesterday. Well, if I got it today or a photograph of it today, it landed yesterday. That would be their third direct mailer.
From one Worthington.
Yeah. Yes. Always bashing me, making false accusations about me. So there are plenty of people in our community who are fed up with it. Plenty of people who have reached out to our campaign and said, what can we do to help? And at this point, it's a matter of ensuring that everyone is accurately informed voters and that we talk to our neighbors and encourage them to vote and to make sure that they're accurately informed.
You know, Jeffrey Hennig, at the state level, it's a paper tiger, the commission that oversees election ethics, you know, and rules and regulations. I'm thinking at the local level, what's in it for anybody to try to correct, you know, misinformation out there and get any satisfaction?
Well, I think national actors are looking at these local races as important for a number of reasons. I mean, one is that it's right now it's these stories about local races that are playing in the media across the country. And so people are forming opinions on a range of issues based on what they think they're seeing portrayed in a few high profile cases. School politics, for a while during the era of No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top, people were thinking, you know, all the actions at the federal level, local school boards don't matter anymore. But it turns out that that local school boards are still the front face of democracy for a lot of people. It's how people get involved in the political system. So there's something at stake for those on the left and something at stake for those on the right for finding these issues that will draw people in and hopefully from their perspective, get them engaged more broadly in politics.
I've always thought they were incredibly important, Nikki Hudson. I mean, it's a form of promotion.
What's a form of promotion?
You know, when you elect somebody even to a school board, even to a local tiny city council or village council, you're promoting somebody.
Absolutely. It's a privilege. I mean, it's an honor to serve in that capacity, and it's an important capacity. I mean, I completely agree that I hope that the silver lining to all of this is increased engagement. That increased engagement, obviously, in order for it to be productive, in order for people to be heard, has to be done in a manner that's civil and respectful. You can't hear someone who's screaming at you at a school board meeting. You don't hear their message, right? You can't respond to someone who is mailing false accusations about you when they are hiding behind an organization that you don't know who everyone is. We now know the one principal because of an IRS filing, but you don't know who's behind the organization. That's not setting up problems can be addressed, right? Where you can find common ground and you can figure out how to move forward.
Where do you recommend people go to find out what the candidates stand for and that's accurate and full?
I do believe that the League of Women Voters event, which is now still available, right, is a great resource. The League of Women Voters came back and did a joint event with our PTAC, a PTA council, mm-hmm. and that is available as well. And Brian was at that event.
What is your recommendation, Jeff Hennig, with a bird's eye view of how people should educate themselves about candidates in these hyper-local races?
Well, in many races, the only way to do it is through candidate forums of one kind or another, because local media is, I celebrate what you're doing here, but local media is thinner than it once was. Local newspapers are mm-hmm. are less robust. So people's channels of information aren't as well developed as they ideally should be. I think there's no alternative to spending some time listening to candidates, because you are voting both for issues and for people.
Yeah, we've got about a minute, Nikki.
I just wanted to add, I don't know one candidate that's not willing to engage in a conversation as well. So if you hear something that doesn't make sense to you or you want additional information, I highly recommend reaching out to
personally.
The candidate. Yes, absolutely.
And if they come to your door, taking the time to talk to them.
Correct.
Yeah. Nikki Hudson, member of the Worthington Board of Education, seeking re-election on November 2nd. She's been the target of negative campaigning in Worthington. It's unusual there. And I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and talk about it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Also, I just want to remind people that we did invite Brian Steele, who seems to be favored by the negative campaigning. He declined our invitation to join the program. I did read some of his statement about the race. Also, Jeffrey Hennig, professor of political science and education at Columbia University Teachers College and co-author of the 2019 book, Outside Money in School Board Elections, The Nationalization of Education Policy. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.